The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to another edition of The Ride Home with John and Kathy, live from the Salem, Pittsburgh studios. And now here are your hosts, John Hall and Kathy Emmons.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome. Thanks for coming along for the Friday edition of The Ride Home.
It's the best edition, John.
It truly is. Friday afternoon. I mean, has the weekend started?
Yeah, no, John, I want to tell you.
Tell me.
Your weekend has begun.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
It's a nice lead up.
Yep. Just a rope you in there.
Yeah.
And an extra big woo-hoo. I mean, how about the news this afternoon?
Seriously, I'm still reeling from the fact that Kenny Pickett's been traded.
How can that even be?
I'm like obsessively reading Twitter.
Yep.
I can't. Okay, so Kenny Pickett has been traded to the Philadelphia Eagles.
The team of his youth.
Right.
Makes him happy to wear that jersey, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jerry Dulac, who covers the Steelers.
Steeler insider.
He said this, Steelers made the move because of the way Pickett was poorly handling the arrival of Russell Wilson, according to sources. That came on the heels of Pickett's behavior last season when he refused to dress as the emergency third quarterback in Seattle in week 17.
Okay, now wait. I never knew that. I don't think any of us ever knew that he refused to dress.
There was rumor about that.
But there was a question, and Tomlin never confirmed that.
But holy smokes.
Oh,
it's shocking news.
I am so, holy heck. So.
What about the Levin commercials? I mean, what's going to happen there?
What'll happen? Right. So they did like a pick swap in the draft.
Yeah.
So not a whole lot of difference. But it does sound like Pickett thought this was going to be his team, especially since Mason left.
Right.
But or maybe it was prior to that. I'm not exactly sure the order of operations. But once Wilson was signed, then he was like, I want out of here.
So
does he feel like the Steelers misrepresented?
I'm sure that you would think that Kenny Pickett thinks that they did him dirty, right? Because they set him up to fail under Matt Canada, right? Then they benched him, and then they brought in Russell Wilson. I mean, if you were Kenny, you'd be salty too, right? I mean,
well, they benched. First of all, he got hurt last year. That's why Rudolph came in. But Rudolph was so much better.
Superior.
So much better.
Yep. I'm shocked. Seriously.
I just never thought that this would happen.
No, because this was Coach Tomlin's pick, right? I mean, there is Kenny at the Steelers facility, you know, training with Pitt. And there's Coach Tomlin seeing him play all these years and thinking, that's my number one quarterback.
Right.
I mean, they took him as the number one pick.
Yeah.
And then quickly, boom. I mean, sports is a rough business, isn't it? Such a brutal, brutal business. Not to say...
It is a brutal business.
I feel bad for Kenny Pickett, but you also feel like, okay, he escaped, turned the page. Here's the deal, though. He's going to go to the Eagles and be someone else's backup. So how good is that? Will he find his way into
starting
position?
Well, I got to be honest. He's going to have a hard time getting into that.
Of course he is.
Getting into the starting role in Philadelphia. I mean, look
who
he's behind.
Yeah,
I mean, good grief. Okay, so Andrew Filippone tweeted a little bit ago that Kenny Pickett is the first Steeler first-round draft pick since Jermaine Stevens to spend less than 3 years with the team.
Hmm. Okay. Well, Omar Khan, the Steelers GM, say what you will. I mean, he is shaking up the organization, is he not?
Yeah, he for sure is.
Excellent.
I mean, I just feel like if he wanted to get out, I totally get it.
Yep.
But I can't imagine that his chances of playing are improved by going to Philadelphia over staying here.
Maybe he just said, get me out of here at
any
cost, right?
It doesn't matter.
And so that's what happened, right?
Right.
But did he have to agree to it or no? I don't know.
Well,
a lot of conjecture. It's early on here in this trade talk. So I'm sure as the weekend unfolds. But anyway. Thanks for being with us today, the Friday edition
that's
of The
incredible.
Ride Home.
Okay.
That's good. Kath, as always, news stories, that breaking news story, but more to go. Do you have the top four at four?
For Friday, March 15th, 2024, I mean,
This number is, one.
Yeah, we already talked
this
about
is
it.
1A.
Right. But this is 1A. And obviously much more important. The UN-backed human rights experts said today that they have gathered new evidence of horrific torture of Ukrainian prisoners of war by their Russian jailers, saying such practices could amount to war crimes. The Commission of Inquiry on Ukraine said human rights violations have been widespread since Russian President Putin ordered his troops to invade the country more than 2 years ago. Last July, the AP, Associated Press, reported that thousands of Ukrainian civilians were being held in Russian prisons and subjected to systematic torture and slave labor. The AP report also cited a Russian government document from January of last year. This is incredible, John. Outlining Moscow's plans to create dozens of new prison colonies and detention centers in occupied Ukraine through 2026. Read more about that if you can bear it at ABC News. Number two, a jury has found James Crumbly, the father of the Oxford High School shooter, guilty of all four counts of involuntary manslaughter. The jury returned a unanimous verdict late yesterday after a nearly week-long trial to determine if the father holds any responsibility for the actions of the son, who killed four students and injured seven other people in November of 2021. Crumbly is accused of not keeping the gun used in the shooting safely stored away and not getting his son the necessary help for his mental health needs. The conviction comes, John, after a jury found his wife, Jennifer, guilty of the same charges in February. Both of them, James and Jennifer Crumbly, will each be sentenced on April 9th. Good. That's from CBS News. Number three, the European Union approved a landmark artificial intelligence law creating a regulatory regime for the 27 EU nations. And I'm glad to see it. I feel like we're all just sitting here and letting AI happen to us.
Right, the corporations.
Anyway, I don't know if this is going to have any teeth or grit to it, but we'll find out. Anyway, the measure bans certain uses of AI, such as creating facial recognition databases, and embraces a risk-based approach to AI regulation. You can read more about that at today's Dispatch. And number four, a sea of green will make its way through downtown Pittsburgh tomorrow. What began more than 150 years ago as a way to honor the patron saint of Ireland has evolved into a citywide celebration we call the St. Patrick's Day Parade. That happens tomorrow starting at 10 a.m. And that, John, is your top four at four.
Pretty good. Okay, so the weather seems to be okay for the parade tomorrow.
For the Irish step dancers, the marching bands, the military members, the community organizers, and Miss Smiling Irish Eyes, Madeline Burns, age 21,
excellent,
of Springdale. Plus, you marched in at one time with your dog.
Oh, I did. And I watched marching multiple times with the Cub Scouts. When my kids were in the Cub Scouts, we always went downtown. And
was that fun?
It's a lot of fun. It's a
blast. I bet it was.
We take the dog with us. He was a little corgi, nice and strong, and always a crowd favorite. So I like the parade. I do.
Great.
But you yourself, have you marched in it?
I don't think so. I mean, I was in the marching band in high school. I remember doing the Veterans Day Parade.
But not the...
I don't remember that, but I did attend it twice because both times I couldn't find a place to go to the bathroom. That's what sticks in the mind.
Okay, so for someone who doesn't like parades, you still chose to show up.
My mom talked me into it.
Uh-huh. Because you're a good daughter.
That's the way she is.
Right, yeah.
I can't believe Kenny Pickett was traded.
That's crazy.
I'm still in shock. Okay, Albert Breer says he communicated to the team he was fine with competing for the job once Russell Wilson was signed.
Yeah.
But then he went he was fine with competing for the job, but when Russell Wilson was signed, he was like, no, I'm no longer okay with it.
Okay. I mean, ego, money, all those things conspire.
A plan for the future.
Yeah. What's it going to look like? I mean, Russell Wilson at best, what do you think? 2 years here? Maybe not. I mean, he's only signed for one year.
Yeah, because Denver's paying about 99% of his salary.
Right. So the Steelers trade, what, they're going to draft a quarterback in this draft?
No. I don't know. I know nothing.
Right.
I never thought they'd trade Deontay Johnson. I also didn't think that Mason Rudolph would leave. Though, I mean, I wasn't all that surprised. And I never expected this.
Well, you got to think, if you're Mike Tomlin, you have to admit that this was a whole thing was a failure, right? That first round pick and what he saw was not what came out in the end. Anyway, weird.
Incredible.
Sports.
Wow.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, come back. The aforementioned St. Patrick, we're going to talk about that next here on The Ride Home, Pittsburgh's Christian Talk. It is Word FM. St. Patrick, often misunderstood, and at least in some circles, kind of thrown under the bus. St. Patrick.
Or certainly miscelebrated.
Yeah, I would say so. Right. Here in the city of Pittsburgh, the St. Patrick's Day Parade is tomorrow, a gigantic event. Generally, it's an excuse for people to get loaded.
Yeah, exactly. Which reminds us, I guess the question is, does that remind us of how St. Patrick lived?
I don't think so, although he is Irish. Ned Bustard is with us. He's a graphic designer, a children's book illustrator, author, printmaker. He has written a children's book called St. Patrick the Forgiven, The History and Legends of Ireland's Bishop. Ned, welcome back to the show.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure.
So, Ned, the Pittsburgh St. Patrick's Day Parade is one of the largest in the nation. Apparently, it's going to attract something like 250,000 people tomorrow to Pittsburgh. A lot of them, as John said, will probably be loaded. Talk about St. Patrick. Was he an imbiber?
Yeah, that's one of those things that I always often get irate about.
Yeah.
Is the appropriation of St. Patrick's feast day for alcohol. And I've been celebrating St. Patrick's Day since I was a little kid. I'm third generation Irish. And it's always been eager to put on the green and to have Irish soda bread and such. But I think one of the things that's kind of fun with the St. Patrick book that I wrote is you learn very quickly that St. Patrick's not even Irish. He was born in England, at that point Britannia, and then was stolen by pirates or Vikings or whatnot, and taken to Ireland to be a slave. Mm. So that was his introduction to Irish culture, was as a slave shepherd boy.
Excellent. Ned, I'm like you. I'm third generation Irish. St. Patrick's Day was a huge event in our house. My mother's maiden name is Maloney, so all of us wore green. I mean, there was a special drawer in my mother's nightstand that had all the St. Patrick's Day pins and paraphernalia. And of course, the first ones who were up on St. Patrick's Day got first choice. So we were all eager to get up early. So St. Patrick, I mean, a seminal figure who's become sort of like, like a cartoon for a lot of people, but a strong man of Christian faith who evangelized and brought many people to Christ, did he not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think for me, he's one of my heroes, because here's a guy who has a conversion experience, escapes from slavery, but then feels God's call to come back to Ireland, to the place he was enslaved, and to share the gospel, and shared the gospel in magnificent ways, significant ways. I mean, it wasn't that there weren't Christians there. I mean, there were slaves of all sorts, and it had been introduced, but he just went in and first thing he did, as far as the stories go, is that he preached the gospel to the high king's son, and the prince converted and gave him an old barn to be his first church. And he would go all over the country sharing the gospel. One of the cool things about him is that if you go to the museum in Ireland, that still has a bell that he would carry.
Really?
And he'd ring this bell to call folks to church.
Oh, that's cool. Wait, so there's a St. Patrick's Museum in Dublin?
No, it's not the St. Patrick's Museum. I'm blanking, which is why I didn't say that. But I don't remember the name of the museum, but it actually has a bell, and then there's a reliquary, fine jewels and gold casing that was built to protect and hold the bell that he would carry around as he was preaching.
Interesting.
Okay, so what years are we talking about?
Oh, you know what? It's 800s.
Okay.
Oh, no, 300s. Wow. 300s. 800s is St. Brendan. That's a later Irish saint.
Yeah.
So.
So you brought up, you were going 300, 800. So he said that's a later Irish saint. So Ireland has a history of men and women who were, you know, passionate in their pursuit of God. And St. Patrick, yeah. Would you say that that was the, you know, he's kind of started that lineage for Ireland?
Well, he did. I think what's interesting about the Irish, when they became, when they converted to Christianity, they were, I mean, it was a very violent, glory-driven culture. And if you're a Christian, you're not going to go out and win these bloody battles. So they came up with something called the White Martyrdom, and the 800 number was for St. Brendan, who they believe probably arrived in Nova Scotia or Canada on his journeys, that they would just go off and be missionaries. And they'd say, well, I'm just going to get in a boat and I'm going to float. And wherever they landed, that was where they would start new monasteries and stuff. So there was a real, they basically channeled their cultural desire for a sacrificial life and the glory of battle and put it towards working for the kingdom of God.
We're talking with Ned Bustard. He's a graphic designer, an illustrator, a publisher. His work is called St. Patrick the Foreigner, the Forgiver, sorry, St. Patrick the Forgiver, the History and Legends of Ireland's Bishop. Ned, what is the story with St. Patrick and the snakes? Allegory, truth? Mm-hmm. What's the whole idea behind here?
Completely not true. As far as... records, archaeological records show there have never been snakes in Ireland. That was some people think that it was a way of talking about ridding the island of demonic forces and paganism,
okay.
Which may or may not be that. But that is one of the fun things with this storybook that I created, as I cover the history and then I also do touch on some of the more outlandish stories. There's stories of him getting rid of all the snakes in Ireland. There's stories of him evangelizing giants. There's stories of him turning evil men into foxes and, you know, all kinds of different things.
Interesting.
So why did you choose St. Patrick for the subject of your book? And I guess the better question is, why do you think it's important for kids to know who he is? Or was?
Well, I'm third generation Irish.
so you think everybody should know?
We should.
Everyone should know about. I'm just hardcore Irish. Now, actually, that's all true. But my first book and the first book for InterVarsity Press when they started their kids line, IVP Kids, was my book Saint Nicholas, the Gift Giver, and that was a story that I'd worked on for many years, and. It was so well received. They said, do you have any other ideas for books? And I said, absolutely. I love St. Patrick. So let's get that out there. I think it's important that people, I also have a book with an author named Steve Nichols called Church History ABCs. And I did that, I don't know, 10 years ago or so. And for me, I think it's really important that folks know their lineage. You know, I was able to visit my great grandfather's birthplace in Donegal, Ireland, and
wow.
I know who I am in part because of where I'm from. And I think that Christians need to know who they are. You know, who they are from where they are from. You know, I think we've got this long tradition, and we just have this history of the church. You know, the cloud of witnesses ahead of us or behind us that we can look to and say, you know, there are folks who've done this and done this well, and I think it's important that we know that, because I think we can get discouraged just by focusing on the here and now and not seeing the whole history of the church.
Ned Bustard is with us. He's the author of The Chronicles of Narnia Comprehension Guide. And I got to tell you, a book I really love, Bigger on the Inside, Christianity and Doctor Who. Ned, I still owe you for that book, because that's awesome. So I guess my last question is, as we celebrate St. Patrick's Day tomorrow, John's family, there are so, I mean, I...
Pittsburgh.
Being Irish is so Pittsburgh. It really is. What do you think you want people to have in their heads when they kind of get up tomorrow or think about St. Patrick in general?
I want them to think about living life completely self-forgetfully and sold out for following God. I think that that's, if you know, there's so much with leprechauns and clovers and such, that rainbows, whatever, that I think that we, it's easy to distracted and not focus on that. Patrick has given us a great roadmap to follow, and it's a life of forgiveness. It's a life of bold proclamation, and it's a life of faithfulness to the end.
Amen. Ned, take a second and talk to our audience. Tell our audience, you're a very curious guy because you sort of have like your own self-publishing unit, and you bring other authors in as well. Talk about that and give us a website so people can go and see where you're what you're doing.
Right. Well, I'm a graphic designer, illustrator. I do my own books, like these kids' books. I did the St. Nicholas, St. Patrick. I just came out with St. Valentine. And that's all stuff that I do on my own. But then I am the creative director for a book publishing company called Square Halo Books. And you can find us at squarehalobooks.com. We just finished our last weekend. We had our annual conference here in Lancaster. And we've been in business for over 25 years. We have over 40 books and started as a theological press. But most of our books are about art and faith. And we have our goal is to give people the opportunity to publish books if they've got something really good to say, to contribute to the encouragement and equipping of the church, and nobody knows who they are. So we look for people who don't have a platform and aren't rock stars, and we try to give them an opportunity to publish.
Yes. Well, you do excellent work.
You sure
Ned.
Do.
We really appreciate your time here with us, and carry on. It's really good stuff.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, that's Ned Buster. You can check out his work at squarehalobooks.com. That's squarehalobooks.com.
If it's Friday, it is time once again for This or That.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a list. And we go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my list.
I'm ready.
Fish sandwich, coleslaw.
I go in coleslaw.
I thought you might.
Yeah, I love it so much.
Mm-hmm. Roses, lilies.
Lilies. Ooh.
Daffodils, crocuses.
Mmm. I'll go with crocus.
Mm. Sweater weather, t-shirt weather.
T-shirt weather.
Mm. Bee sting. Poison ivy.
I guess I'll go bee sting. It's not going to spread, right?
Riding a bike, playing hopscotch.
Oh, hopscotch is dumb.
No, it's not.
Yes, it
That's
is.
Wrong.
It's
wrong
dumb.
Answer.
Riding a bike.
A bag of Fritos. A bag of Doritos.
No, Fritos. Mm. 10 times out of 10, mm. Fritos.
Kate Winslet. Kate Middleton.
Oh, well, Kate Winslet.
Reading a book in your yard. Having a meal on the porch.
Oh, that's really hard. I'm going to go with the meal on the porch.
Mm-hmm. Christmas Day. Easter Sunday.
Oh, Easter Sunday, I guess.
A new car. A new kitchen.
I'm still going new kitchen.
Yep. Prague. Paris.
Paris.
Chicago. Cleveland.
Cleveland.
Mm. Spring roll. Egg roll.
Spring roll. Always. Sorry.
A blister. A pimple.
I'll go blister for 500.
A clean bathroom.
Oh.
A clean bedroom.
Clean bathroom.
Mm. Marching in the St. Patrick's Day Parade. Singing the national anthem at Heinz Field.
Oh. If I was in a group, singing the national anthem.
Not solo.
Yeah. Not, no way.
Which one is it?
I would never... What are my choices?
Marching in the St. Patrick's Day
Parade. Okay, I'll march in the parade.
All right, good. That's my this or that.
Good grief. That's hard, John. Okay, we're right in the middle of NFL free agency.
Oh,
I don't know if you've
are.
Noticed
I
this
have,
week,
yes.
Right?
Following closely.
Exactly who we've gotten, who mm-hmm. we've let go. So the question is, are you going to stick with what you have? Or are you going to trade?
Okay, all right,
okay?
I like it.
So, John, I've prepared for you the free agency edition of this or that.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, so these are all going to have yes or no answers.
Mm, oh.
Trade one of your sons for a daughter.
No.
That's an easy one. I started to do out easy. Trade your Honda CR-V for a Toyota RAV4 same year.
No.
Trade your parochial school education for a public school education.
No.
Trade your Roman Catholic upbringing for a Protestant upbringing.
No.
Trade your big family growing up for growing up with a small family.
No.
Trade your surgically repaired reverse shoulder for a full head of hair.
No.
Trade your years living in New York City for years living in Pittsburgh instead.
No.
Trade your steep driveway for a flat one.
No.
Wow, Lexi. Trade your dishwasher for another brand same year.
No.
Trade Nora Jones for Ella Fitzgerald.
Yes.
Trade Diana Krall for Ella Fitzgerald.
Yes.
Trade Ella Fitzgerald for Billie Holiday.
No.
Trade U2 for Journey.
No. What the heck?
That was awesome. That was really funny. Trade Peter Gabriel for Paul Simon.
No.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. I thought you would go. Trade Barry for Mayor of Easttown.
No.
Really? You're sticking with Barry?
Yeah.
Trade Breaking Bad for Mayor of Easttown.
Yes.
You're kidding me.
Yes.
Trade winter in Pittsburgh for winter in Florida?
Yes.
Oh. Trade living on a roof in Portugal for living on a roof in Italy.
Yes.
Trade black diamond cheddar for Manchego.
No.
Trade Manchego for St. Andre.
Yes.
Because that's good stuff,
sure
isn't
is.
It? That's so creamy. Trade linguine with white clam sauce for linguine with meat sauce.
No.
Trade Serafino's for Tesoro's.
Yes.
Trade Bill Peduto for Luke Ravenstall.
Oh, boy. No.
Okay. Trade Myron Cope for Bruce Kaiden.
No.
Trade Myron Cope for Uncle Doug Hirth.
No.
Okay. Trade Kenny Pickett for Mason Rudolph.
Yes.
Trade Paul Skeens for Garrett Cole.
No.
Trade arriving at your wedding on time, John, for missing the opening of the Swissvale Winkies.
No. We are in the throes of the Lenten season, and Kath and Lex and I, we have all been denying ourselves from something that has been crushing our lives. It's true.
We decided to try to distance ourselves from sugar.
Independently.
Yeah, the three of us didn't decide to do it as a team.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Alexa was listening in.
Exactly.
Don't drive you crazy?
That's creepy.
Right. So here we are. We're 2+ weeks into this.
I did it because I felt like sugar had become too important to me.
For me.
You thought the same thing?
100. I live and die by it.
Yeah.
More appropriately, I'm dying by it, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's it's been hard.
It's
harder than I thought.
Yeah.
I mean,
because
I don't
in
like
my
it.
Mind, when I'm eating, I'm thinking about what's coming next.
You mean now or?
Yes. Oh, no. Previous to this.
Right.
Because I'm always thinking about, okay, well, what am I going to eat after this meal?
Right. I'm having dinner and then I'm going to have 3 cookies.
Right. But now I really am enjoying my food more. That is the number one takeaway I have.
Mm-hmm. Now, my takeaway is I think about eating something and then feel disgruntled because I can't. And then I go, okay, surrender and pray about it.
Yeah. That's great.
Well, tell me about it in the midst of it all.
I mean, when you think about it, it's such a first world problem that we're sacrificing.
It's tiny.
It means nothing.
It's ridiculous.
But I was thinking it's good for me to just be like an adult and say you can't have what you want.
And this is
all the time. You just can't.
Right. This is what it is. Dr. Amy Peeler is back with us. She's a regular guest on our show, associate professor of New Testament at Wheaton College, associate rector at St. Mark's Episcopal Church, also the author of an excellent book, Women and the Gender of God. Dr. Peeler, welcome back.
Oh, it's so good to be back with you all. I'm listening to your conversation with great joy. This is very interesting, all this denial during this season.
Yeah. Okay, so how do you look at Lent? Do you feel like it's an appropriate season for denial? I'm not sure how, I think I know how your general tradition looks at it, but how do you personally?
Yeah. No, I think it is a great season to do something different. I think humans don't want to just repeat the same thing every day, right? All cultures have holidays and festivals and times of, you know, more solemnity. And so the church calendar attends to that very human issue. So I do think Lent is a great time, as y'all are talking about, to practice self-control, to say, I don't have to have things. And Kathy, I love hearing that in so doing, you actually are able to enjoy other things more. Mm-hmm. I think personally, you know, coming into this season, sometimes I do feel like, hey, there are things I'm too dependent on. I need to cut them out. But in other instances, this year, it's also a good time to add practices. You know, like maybe there's a devotional practice I've kind of let go. This would be a good time to add it to my schedule. So maybe there's a little bit of a denial of personal time in that because you're adding something in. But I think the overarching is that, hey, these are seasons to live a little bit differently than we had been. It's not the regular, the same old. And that's actually refreshing.
Excellent. Amy, what I think is that a lot of, especially Protestant, Presbyterian, people who are outside of a Roman Catholic tradition, look at the church calendar and perhaps even more so Lent as something a little outside of the mainstream. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, I think that could be true. I think sometimes Christians would say, look, Jesus has died and is risen. Like, we have the victory in Christ. We don't have to kind of walk around with sackcloth and ashes, you know, like there's life to celebrate. And that's absolutely true. But I do think this season, remembering two things. One, we always struggle with sin. And so an intentional time of repentance is a good preparation for Easter. And to also remember that we will die. I mean, that is a real downer, right? Yeah. That is not something we want to think about. But talk about a first world issue or a modern issue. We don't often have to think about death unless, there's a health problem or something. But this season says, this is not going to last forever. You will stand before God, and that's worthy of consideration.
Well, nobody wants to think about that, as you said. That could be the most unpopular topic ever for people to dwell on. But I think, that's part of the sickness that we have, right? Is that we kind of act, or we act like it's not going to happen, or we're amusing ourselves to death in the process.
Yes, that's right. And actually, there's something freeing, I think, in the church practice of this. So yes, we have these 40 days of Lent, these weeks of considering these heavy things. But there's a pause on that every Sunday. So every Sunday when we come together, that's a feast day. That's a celebration of the resurrection. I was just talking with one of the high school members of our church, and she said, too, I'm giving up sugar. And we were at church, and we were having some treats. And I was like, oh, but you can have it on Sunday. She's like, oh, I had no idea. I thought you had to deny yourself the whole time. And I said, no, that's not really how the calendar is set up. We get little breaks on Sunday along the way to remind us, ultimately, hey, the resurrection is coming. Yes, I need to think about my mortality, but Christ has already solved that problem. And I get to remember that one day a week in this season of heaviness.
So the idea of denying ourselves, I mean, in 21st century America, that is verboten, right? We rarely deny ourselves. And so are there theological practices? I mean, is there, I wonder if there's like, you know, a Bible study of denying ourselves. I mean, would that be the case?
Oh, that's a great question. Maybe one of the best places to go, I think the Gospel of Mark, that section, especially chapters 8 through 10, where Jesus is emphasizing the cost of discipleship. He says to them all, I'm coming to die. You know, Peter has that confession, hey, you shouldn't have to die. That's no good. And Jesus says, hey, that's the way of thinking like the devil, not like God. Death is a part of this movement, and you need to take up your cross. So that could be a great place to go. The church actually started this season to get people who wanted to make a commitment to Christ, to become Christians, be baptized, to give them several weeks to really consider, to count the cost, as Jesus says. Do you want to join this movement? Because it is going to cost you everything.
Wow, I didn't know that, Amy. So it's built in then to church history. Let's pause and consider where we are, if you'd like to join us or not, because it comes at a price.
Exactly. Both for those who were considering joining the movement and also for those who had fallen away, maybe an egregious sin, or they had stopped participating with the church. This was a season for them to return, to repent, to show that they were sorry for what they had done, and then they would be let back in at Easter.
Really? Amy, I've never heard that.
Yeah, and I'm drawing here. I really wanted to recommend my friend Esau McCulley has a book called Lent. It's in the series Fullness of Time for all the church year. It's very readable, very accessible, but he does a great job of telling this story that, yes, this season is preparation for conversion, and also it's a season of reconciliation, which I think is actually really powerful. So if there have been broken relationships in your family or with friends or the church, this is actually a great time of year to think about how those could be healed and restored.
Wow. Okay. So we were talking about giving up sugar, and that's...
Minor.
That, first of all, it's so incredibly minor. But to me, it was major, because I just felt like there was something that was mastering me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just felt like it was unhealthy. I needed to get a grip on it. But John and I were talking about Joel chapter 2 before you came on the air with us,
cool.
Amy. This is starting with the 12th verse. Even now declares the Lord, return to me with all your heart, with fasting and weeping and mourning. Rend your heart, not your garments. Return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in love, and he relents from sending calamity. And so to me, I kind of read that as, you know, rend your heart, not give up sugar. You know what I mean? Like the sugar's not the point, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's true. And yet we are beings who are both soul and spirit and body. So sometimes the way into our heart is through our stomach. Sometimes that is the case. And so there's a way in which it could be performative, right? Oh, I'm giving up sugar. I want to, you know, tell friends about that, how hard it is or whatever. But then I think how you're talking about it is this is unhealthy. And this is a great time of year for me to ask the Lord's assistance in doing something that's getting rid of something that's not good for me. So it can be more substantive for sure.
Fabulous. Amy, thanks. Thanks for this always. A very unique perspective you always present.
Oh, so fun to discuss with you all. I hope it is a blessed, a holy Lent for you, and then a wonderful Easter.
A great, great celebration. We're looking forward to it. That's Dr. Amy Peeler, Associate Professor of New Testament at Wheaton College, and she's the author of Women and the Gender of God. We'll be right back. Much more to come on the Thursday edition of The Ride Home.
I read a story earlier this week about... a man who is 78 years old, who has basically spent the entirety of his life inside an iron lung.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, you remember what an iron lung is.
Here's the thing. I know the word.
Yeah.
And I know that people who had TB often had...
Polio.
Polio. I hadn't thought of that.
Yep.
But I don't really know how it works.
Yeah, well, here's how. So this poor man, I'm not poor man. He's lives an incredible life, is what he is. His name is Paul Alexander, and he was infected with polio at the age of 6, and at that point, put inside an iron lung. So an iron lung It works by rhythmically changing air pressure inside this metal chamber to force air in and out of the lungs. That's what it is. It's like a hyperbolic chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Your whole body's in there, but your head sticks out of at this end. But you can't move your arms. It's just your head. And you're breathing through a tube that this iron lung produces, this oxygen that produces for you.
I can't imagine that.
Now, this was a thing, and there was somebody in our neighborhood growing up who was in an iron lung. And, of course, I remember my mom going to visit. We as kids were not allowed because infection and whatnot. But this was a big thing. So Paul Alexander, no cause of death was given, but clearly, I mean, he died because of the infections and what happened to him. 1952, he contracted polio. He was quickly paralyzed. Doctors at Parkland Hospital in Dallas put him in an iron lung so he could breathe. He said one day, quote, "I opened my eyes from a deep sleep and looked around for something familiar, anything. Everywhere I looked was all very strange. Little did I know that each new day my life was unavoidably set on a path that would become unimaginably strange and more challenging." Now, of course, changes in science led technology to portable ventilators for people with respiratory problems, but his chest muscles, which it often happens, were too damaged to use on any other machine.
Really?
And so he was reliant on that machine for most of his life. When he was inside the machine, he needed the help of others for basic tasks, such as eating and drinking. And for much of his life, that came from Kathy Gaines, who was his lifelong caregiver.
Wow.
In January of this year, he launched a TikTok account with help from others, and he began creating videos about his life. Some addressed broader parts of his life, like how he practiced law. He was a lawyer from his iron lung. In other videos, he took questions from the more than 330,000 followers about his mundane yet interesting aspects of his daily life. In one video, he detailed the emotional and mental challenges of living inside an iron lung. He said, quote, "It's lonely. It can be hard." As the machine, it was in the background, going through its machinations. Quote, "Sometimes it's desperate because I can't touch someone. My hands don't move, and no one touches me, except in rare occasions, which I cherish. I long for human touch." Over the years, he said that his life...
This is an ignorant question. Is he in that all the time?
No, because he taught himself how to breathe for extended periods outside of the iron lung.
Okay.
But he says he remembers playing outside in a hot summer day in 1952. He came home with a 102-degree fever and a headache and a stiff neck. His mother wrote a foreword to the book of his life. She said, "I had every reason to be terror-stricken, and I was. Polio, the dreaded disease for every parent, was stalking through our city like a big black monster, crippling and killing wherever it went. And there was Paul's symptoms, which confined him to a life inside that iron lung."
Wow.
Never married, but he had a very prosperous degree, and he worked as a lawyer. So he made the best of the bad situation.
Incredible story.
Paul Alexander.
Welcome to another edition of The Ride Home with John and Kathy, live from the Salem-Pittsburgh studios. And now here are your hosts, John Hall and Kathy Emmons.
Well, good afternoon. Greetings to you. It is the Friday edition of The Ride Home. Kath?
Yep.
What about the weekend?
I feel good about it because, as of this point right now, your weekend has begun.
Fabulous.
It's not in the future, John.
Oh, it's here.
It's in process.
This moment,
we're
right?
We're in it.
We are living the weekend.
We are.
Feels good, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it? Very good.
Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, John, we're going to talk about the Great American Road Trip, which mm-hmm. you and I have been wanting to take for about 100 years.
Heck yeah. I dream about it.
Yeah. Anyway, the Wall Street Journal says it could be even better by train. I don't know. I'm just saying that we're going to talk about that. Also, the Week in Review is coming up at the bottom of the hour. What was everyone talking about this week? Conversations that made us think. Good stuff that we've been watching, eating, listening to. That sort of thing.
Excellent. But first, remember the friendship between two former Supreme Court justices, Antonin Scalia and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. This was a very famous, very public friendship, right?
Opera lovers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Baseball lovers.
Yes, baseball. I forgot about that.
And that showed that Democrat, Republican can reach across deeply, can be friends even though they have harsh disagreements about the law and its application. Well, there's a new pair in the Supreme Court, and it's highlighted yesterday's Washington Post. It tells the story of Amy Coney Barrett and Sonia Sotomayor.
Really?
And their friendship and their public roadshow, where they are going to different organizations in front of a live audience and sitting down and talking about themselves and what's happening on the court. Hallelujah. This is interesting. Sotomayor says in this article, the Supreme Court, the headline is, the Supreme Court seems bitterly divided. Two justices say otherwise. Sotomayor says, quote, "We don't sit on opposite sides of an aisle. We all wear the same black robe. We don't have red robes or blue robes. And our loyalty lies to the Constitution and the court." Now, Amy Coney Barrett, she was an appeals court judge, a longtime Notre Dame law professor, was cast by Democrats as a threat to the health care and reproductive rights,
right,
a.k.a. abortion.
Especially, I mean, she was nominated by Trump. So, of course, she was stained by that association.
Yep.
You know,
even before she took over the role, right? She was marred.
Because people predicted what she was going to be like.
Yep. Now, her replacement, of course, was Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it paved the way for the newly configured conservative majority to quickly eliminate the right to abortion and overturn Roe v. Wade. But the justice, Amy Coney Barrett, has emerged as a moderating view in other areas, more in line with Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Brett Kavanaugh, both conservatives, but less so than Justice Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito. She's been increasingly outspoken in calling for narrow rulings and less heated rhetoric. Barrett and Sotomayor are not the first pair of justices, as I said, to go on this roadshow, and they've appeared more than 10 times around Washington, D.C., and now across the country.
Specifically to speak together?
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
Relations in the court have been tested and at times strained in recent years. After the 2022 leak of the court's draft opinion to overturn Roe v. Wade, Alito said that the unprecedented betrayal of trust certainly changed the atmosphere at the court. Quote, "The justices also struggled under pressure from Democrats in Congress to agree on an ethics code in response to media reports of lavish trips and gifts that some justices have received from billionaire friends." But Barrett and Sotomayor, who did not respond to an interview request for this article that I'm reading from, did not focus on those tensions. In their joint appearances this week and in late February and in early January, instead, they emphasized the importance of cultivating collegiality, describing conversations about family, favorite television shows, books, and sports during their workday lunches. "We don't raise voices, no matter how hot button the case. We always speak with respect," Barrett said. "And it's important that even though we disagree with how many of my colleagues approach these questions, I'm vocal about that disagreement, and I lay out what I think are wrong, and I hope someday that they'll see the error of their ways, but we do so in a confined, congenial manner. No raising of voices," she says. "We're not going anywhere, so we have to get along. But shouldn't that be true of all of us in a civic community? Why should any of us want to obliterate the opposition or even see another person as the opposition? I think we should all be trying to get along better."
Yes, that.
If they can do it in those close quarters and deeply.
That's an incredible story. And it just goes to show how twisted we all are, that we just project all of our angst on everybody else.
Yep.
We don't know anything about what goes on inside the Supreme Court.
No.
But in our minds, we have made this into like some epic battle between two sides, right? People who hate each other, people who wish violence upon one another, who have hatred for one another.
People are camping out at their houses.
Right.
Right. Threatening them and their families.
Right. Meanwhile, it seems like from what they're saying, inside the Supreme Court chambers is just a place of reason and debate. And the crazy people are us.
And goodwill. I mean, I would think that, you know, just from my reading, that Sonia Sotomayor is probably the most liberal. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Kenji Jackson, probably,
right,
as well, right?
Sure.
But if they can get along, liberal and conservative,
then what is wrong with the rest of us?
Is it the media?
Yes.
I mean, let's throw that
yes.
under the bus.
I hate to say that.
We stir the pot.
I hate to say that. I think that's a lot of it because there's just all this stirring up all the time.
24-hour cable news.
Yes.
Right. We need to fill the
yes.
time, so let's create rancor.
Yeah. And whenever they talk about the Supreme Court, it's like they're talking about it's like the Supreme – we kind of project all of our political divisions on those nine people.
Right. And we act as though it's God divining Moses with the Ten Commandments,
yeah, right.
that this is something sacred and holy that defines us forever and ever.
Yeah.
And when in fact it's not.
Right. And depending on what side of the aisle we're on, there are good guys there and bad guys. Right. And it doesn't. And we just assume that those people who disagree with our tribe are the bad ones on the court. We should ditch them.
And the truth is, they have to get along. They sit and share lunch with each other. They look each other in the eye over a tuna fish sandwich.
Right.
How basic is that? Come from a railroad family, which is to say my grandfather and my uncles all made their living on the railroad. I've got a photograph in our house of my grandfather as a young man. He looks like he's in his early 20s, sitting atop a boxcar with other like-minded guys. These are people that look like they've been around the block a few times. And the commemoration was a record run from Pittsburgh to Erie. And there they all are. There must be 20, 25 guys as part of this train travel.
So you have this picture?
I do.
Mm-hmm. That's so amazing.
Yeah. And I remember as a kid, my grandfather would often disappear, sometimes for weeks at a time, because he had a free train pass.
Huh.
So he could travel the country for free. I mean, he'd go out and visit relatives in California on the train.
Wow.
This was in the 1960s, so a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And of course, Amtrak changed all that, right? In an effort to make train travel a little more, what, democratic, I guess, mm-hmm. or streamline it.
Maybe
after,
efficient.
Maybe so, which had the opposite effect. If anyone's ridden on Amtrak, have you ridden on Amtrak?
No, my daughter rides Amtrak regularly,
yeah.
but so I only know secondhand.
So have you never been on a train?
I've been on a – the last time I was on a train, well, in this country,
here,
the last time
yeah.
I was on a train, I was probably 9.
Oh, it's a long time ago. Sorry.
That's not how he said that. No, it is a long time ago.
Well, this is a long time ago. Back in the 1980s, when I lived in New York City, I regularly would come back and forth from Pittsburgh, New York.
Is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
To take the train. You know, you go around Dead Man's Curve in Altoona.
Yeah, right.
Which was very slow, a little more than the bus, but at least you could get up and walk around and mm-hmm. see the scenery. And, you know, there was some extra space. So Amtrak suffers a problem, a lot of PR problems, of course. Because what Amtrak does is they are secondary to the freight trains.
Mm-hmm.
So when a freight train is coming through, which is often, Amtrak has to pull off, God bless you, pull off to the side of the road and wait for the freight trains to pass, which always delays your time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, okay, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, The Great American Road Trip is Even Better by Train. And in the article, they say that oftentimes your train and you're on time, you know, in quotes here, sometimes delayed by as much as 6 to 8 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Depending upon the route and where you are in this country, because you are beholden to the freight trains
right.
and their schedules.
Wow.
It's an excellent article. It really is. Katie Dighton is the author of the article. Now, what's cool is she's British. So you can imagine if you've been on trains in Europe, right? That rail, the trains in Europe are superior, even though there's been a decline
yeah,
lately
really
to what's happened here in mm-hmm. the United States. But
they have a lot less space.
A lot less space.
Right, to work around.
She talks about this article. In the article, she's on her way from New York City to Orlando, Florida, 17 hours on board the train, and she's thinking she may have 6 more hours to go. So it's a long, long trip. However, believe me, it's a lot better than the bus.
Oh, right? For sure.
I've done that.
Oh, me? I've done that.
Taking a bus from Florida to Pittsburgh?
Yes, twice.
Yeah.
That's a long...
Oh, it was the worst.
And it was smelly.
The worst.
There's no room.
No, you're jammed in there. Anyway, from Florida to New York or New York to Florida, $123 on the Amtrak Silver Service.
New York to Florida is $123.
That's pretty good. Customer trips on Amtrak in 2023 increased 24% over 2022. to 28.6 million riders, and Amtrak expects them to surpass 2019's pre-pandemic levels. Riders age 55 to 75 make up nearly half of the passengers. But younger generations, of course, are not immune to the charm. First-time Gen Z riders are flooding TikTok with videos of sunsets through Amtrak windows and to melancholy Father John Misty songs. All right?
Okay, now let me say something. I am all in trying a train trip.
Yeah.
But the very first thing that needs to change is the station in Pittsburgh is embarrassing.
It is.
It's awful.
It's a trailer.
It's terrible. Right. And when you go to see somebody off or greet somebody, you're outside on the track.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
I mean, it's just...
At 3 a.m.
Yeah. It's really very, very poorly done.
Yeah. I mean, you think of the magisterial architecture of the old train stations.
A Penn Station?
I mean, here in the city of Pittsburgh, what that used to look like.
I know.
Because that's when we relied upon trains from mass transit, right? People didn't have cars like they do now, right?
It's dirty, dark, and gross.
You can take a 51-hour route from Los Angeles to Seattle that goes...
Wow, right up the coast?
Yep.
Does it really?
Yep. Los Angeles to Seattle, it costs $499. You can also buy a 10-ride pass.
What does that mean?
You get a one ticket for $500 that gives you 10 rides on an Amtrak train.
Oh, and so you can just decide, use them wherever.
Yeah. Here's the weird thing. You can't choose a seat. So as you board the train, they assign you a seat. So you don't know if you're getting a window seat or an aisle seat. The author of this piece says, if you ask politely, more often than not, you get yourself a window seat.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you get on Amtrak here and go east to Philadelphia, you pick your own seat.
Oh, do you?
Okay. Not ahead of time.
Right.
When you get there. Like you walk in and you scope it out.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's like, isn't that the way the bus was?
The bus to me is just a free-for-all.
That's what I mean. That's, and the train is
just
the same
out,
way as
right?
far as.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, the author says in this that, you know, she... says, I either went to the club car or the observation car. Some of the, you know, I'm sure there's no observation car from Pittsburgh to New York City, but the longer routes still have observation cars, glass ceilings where you can see. But she does say that older people, especially married people, they opt for a bunk equipped roomette with a bedroom and access to station lounges and hot meals. It's a premium seat. She profiles a couple in here that sold everything in their life at the age of 65 and have traveled the country, primarily on Amtrak. They go New York to Orlando or Orlando across the Pacific Northwest.
Or New Orleans to Chicago.
Yeah. And just that's all they do is ride the train, get off and go back on. Now, you would have to have deeper pockets to do that. But if you've got no home, you have no home, no mortgage, and you're living suitcase to suitcase, it kind of sounds like an interesting way to live for a while.
Wow. You know what I think, though? Because I've watched a lot of videos on YouTube about train trips because I find it fascinating. It would be hard to get any exercise if you're on a long train trip. Because there's not, I mean, there's room to, there's certainly a lot more room to get up and walk around than if you're on a bus.
Sure.
But there's still not a lot. You know, if you're on a train for 4 or 5 days, you're basically sitting for 4 or 5 days.
So they're saying some people, the more experienced travelers, go to a destination, say like they're getting a train trip from Pittsburgh to Cleveland. They get off in Cleveland, spend a night at a hotel, and then the next morning wait for that trip to come through. And, you know, continue on.
So they're not sleeping on the train.
Right.
They're getting off.
That's
going,
the 10
ticket trip
thing.
Got
it. You can do that for $500.
Got it.
So then you're free to wander, right?
Right.
You break it up in smaller chunks, which I like the idea of.
Right. Would you rather do that than stay on the train the whole time?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would too.
Right. You get the, you know, I'm going to go wander around this city or this little small town and come back and then grab the next train to wherever I'm going to.
Right.
I just love the idea of it. I mean, it's a shame. You know, the federal government made a decision way back, you know, post-World War II, whether they were going to build highways or invest in trains.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they chose highways, which makes America America, right? The Great American Road Trip. But we are sadly lacking. When you look at the excellence of the railroads in Europe or at least the how they used to be. I mean, it's a quick trip on for many people, right?
I'm sure. How many trains did you take when you were in Europe? You must have.
Oh, a ton. For a long time, I traveled with a guy from Australia, and we always played this game. You'd be like in the middle of nowhere, and we'd say, what if you lived here? You know, and you make up a story. If we lived here, this is what would. Right. And you get to see, I mean, the things that you get to see on a train, it's like the backyard of America, right? You're not going through, you're going through little small towns, places that are out of the way. It's a glorious way to travel if you have no time to worry about.
That's the thing. I mean, if you've got, you know, a 2 week per year vacation or 3 week per year vacation, a train doesn't make any sense because it would just take too long.
But if you were, you know, just
independently wealthy, you mean?
Carefree and, you know, just able to go wherever you wanted to go. Why
not?
I would love to try that.
That would be awesome. I would love that. I would even love to maybe start out by doing a weekend thing.
Just to see what it's like.
Yeah. Like just do a Friday to Monday thing and stick your toe in.
Right.
And then if you like it, then maybe do a longer one.
We've had family go on the Canadian Railroad.
Oh, the one through the Rockies?
Yes. Which apparently must be glorious as well because all the cars are observation cars.
Right.
So you sit up top and take that in. Can you imagine how beautiful that is?
No, I can't imagine that.
Right.
I had a friend who flew down to New Orleans, spent a couple of days there, and then took the train from New Orleans to Chicago, which was an overnight, and then from Chicago to Pittsburgh.
Nice.
It was a loop like that. I think the whole trip was 5 days. Flying down, hanging out there, going to Chicago, and then going to Pittsburgh.
I mean, again, given the alternatives, right? Rent a car, get on a Greyhound bus, or take a train. It's probably the most expensive of the three, don't you think?
Yeah.
Right? But, I mean, and I wonder about safety. I think it's got to be fairly safe on a train, right?
It has to be safer than car travel.
I wonder. Well, I mean, you hear about train derailments, but if say you were like, you know, a woman traveling alone, how safe would you feel?
Well,
on a train?
So since my daughter travels a lot by train, that's a big concern of hers. That's why she said it's important to get to the train early and be able to scope out who you're going to sit next to.
Right.
She's learned the hard way that it can be a very long trip if you're behind somebody or you're next to somebody who is
shady.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just, you know, heads that's up, just, no matter where you're traveling.
Well, yeah, and that's right? What it is on a bus, too, mm-hmm. right?
That's just the art of growing up,
it
right?
It really is.
Situational awareness. Mm-hmm. Anyway, maybe someday. It's one of those bucket list things.
Yeah, the ride home. What if we could, like, gather a bunch of listeners who'd want to go with us?
Great American train trip. From Pittsburgh to New York City?
Yeah.
New Orleans.
I want to do that
one. How long is that?
Well, you have to fly. Yeah, I think you'd have to fly to New Orleans. You can't take the train from Pittsburgh to New Orleans.
Can't.
No, there's
but
no
back,
direct
you
route. Well, you go. It goes New Orleans to Chicago to Pittsburgh.
That's got to be like days and days and days.
I think the whole trip was 5 days.
All right. Let's try it on the road with a ride home on a train. The Pittsburgh Riverhounds. It is Pittsburgh's professional soccer team. Mm-hmm. Soccer team. You've been down to a game?
I've never been to a game, but I've been to Highmark Stadium a couple times.
Yeah.
I mean, most recently for the Jazz Festival over the summer.
Okay. It's a nice space, isn't it?
It's a really nice space.
I think so,
and
too.
And the view of downtown at night is beautiful.
And I would also say underutilized in many ways, right? It's dark more often than not.
I agree.
So listen to this. Pittsburgh's soccer team, they want to supersize. I think is it called Highmark Stadium?
Yes.
They want to supersize the stadium with a $75 million expansion meant to capitalize on attendance and the passionate fan base. The Riverhounds have applied for a $10 million straight state grant to help triple seating capacity at Highmark Stadium. And the team is interested in just more than soccer as it plans to expand the 11-year-old stadium, which it says is due for major renovation. Stadium currently holds 5,500 people. The team plans to expand up to 15,000 seats. Riverhounds set an average attendance record last year with more than 5,000 fans during a regular season game. In a statement, the team said that its expansion plans are to ensure the club can continue to grow in light of its popularity and finishing at the top of the regular season standings in the league. I mean, this is super cool. So someone on Twitter yesterday, I think I read this, that they were like, this is an alternative in many ways to Star Lake. right? Man, closer to home.
A lot closer.
15,000 seats. I mean, I don't know what Starlight holds.
There would, I don't know either, but the area around there, I mean, is so large that if you get lawn seating at Starlake, there are thousands of people can get there.
Right.
Now, the problem with Highmark, though, is where are you going to park?
Oh, Station Square.
Yeah, but if you triple the
parking,
a lot. Like when I was there for the jazz festival, I was like doing kind of street parking, kind of along the road that takes to Highmark Stadium.
And that was tight at 5,500 capacity.
And there was certainly nowhere near 5,000 people
there.
Maybe
they built a parking garage, which you hate to see, another parking garage.
Yeah, I wonder if they tripled their capacity, what that plan would look like.
Yeah. Okay, remember the old, concert venue down by Station Square, right?
The Icy Light Amphitheater.
Yes, which was renowned for, I saw shows there.
So did I.
Right? Trains go by and regularly interrupt the acts.
Right.
So the acts would kind of have to hold for the train.
Speaking of trains. If it's a long train, then you're going to be holding for a long time.
And, of course,
time.
Some trains were interactive. They were blowing the horn and people like stop there and you wait. But I like the idea of it.
I just can't tell you what a beautiful view of the city it is.
Yeah, it really is. And, to take a family to go see a soccer game, it's super cool.
Yeah.
And fairly inexpensive, all things considered. It really is. But on a nice summer night. And, of course, these are pros, a soccer team. And if you get, next to the field, which you can, you're standing next to a chain link fence, these guys are literally an arm's length away from you as they're wrestling for the ball with their feet. So it's a really cool venue to see that.
I'd love to see that. Maybe this summer.
Yeah, let's go. All right, we'll take a quick break, come back. Is this the Week in Review?
Yes, it is the Week in Review, John.
All right. What did we read? What did we eat? What did we listen to?
What are we watching?
Conversation that made us think. All that. Stick around. The Friday edition. It's the best edition of The Ride Home. Pittsburgh Christian Talk. It's Word FM.
It's been another week. That means it's time for John and Kathy's Week in Review. What was everyone talking about this week?
Well, we often, sort of focus on national or international stories. But this week, the Steelers have a new quarterback.
That's big news in Pittsburgh.
And Yammer Yager's bobbleheads were stolen. I think that superseded any other story.
I also think people saying goodbye to Mason Rudolph.
Yep.
And, if he would have left for another team at the end of last season, people would have been no big deal.
Shrugged their shoulders.
But he, I'm telling you, put the team on his back this year.
Yep.
At the end, won those three games. I think people are sad to see him go.
I think so, too. So wish him all the best. Mm-hmm. Hope he gets to play, right?
Me, too.
What was a conversation that made you think?
Well, we had a lot of conversations
this week.
Patty Scott, My Last Thought is Love, when she gave a kidney up.
Right.
Mike Cosper with The Evil Inside, talking about Hamas. Generational Curses with Roger Olson. What is a Woman with Katie McCoy. Solo Planet with Anna Broadway. Liturgy Inside the Wilderness with Dan Murata.
Wasn't that good?
Yep. Jesus Juke with Bonnie Kristen. Mm-hmm. Those were all stories. I go, oh, it's hard for me. But something I did think about, as I'm driving home, the weird conversation with Roger Olson. With generational curses.
Oh, yeah. Are generational curses a real thing?
I mean, because you think about that. The sins of the father,
yep.
Right?
Right.
I mean, Roger's idea is no, this is all superstition.
Mm-hmm.
The generational curses are not a real thing. But I think if you talk to, the person on the street, as uninformed as that person is, people would say, I believe in generational curses. Right?
I think they would, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a clarifying conversation with me.
It was.
Yeah.
I still picked the Tuesday conversation. It was at 4:10 with Mike Cosper. He was with us for the whole hour talking about the Hamas and Israel situation. I think I said this on the air during the interview, but you and I probably read at least an article every day about Israel-Hamas. Right?
Easily.
So that means since October 7th, we've been reading a lot about
again
it.
And again.
I put this in the top three articles I've read that just helped me to take a step back and see it in a different context. It was so excellent. Mike Cosper's the one who did The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, the podcast that gained so much traction. It was number one on Amazon podcasts for week after week after week. And it was interesting to interview him when he spends his life interviewing other people.
Right.
Yeah. So I really appreciated that. Yeah. So if you missed the Mike Cosper interview, or if you missed the Roger Olson or anything else we brought up, just find our podcast wherever you get your podcasts, The Ride Home with John and Kathy.
What are you reading?
I didn't.
Okay.
I mean, here's a fine line here. And to read for enjoyment is what we do, right? I mean, all week long is what we read.
Right.
But then to read for enjoyment slash pleasure, you know, I'll read a piece of fiction or a biography. I was too busy reading for other things this week.
Yeah, that
so
happens.
I did not delve into this.
Yeah.
You?
That happens. I am so happy to report that I finally finished Paris.
Hey.
By Edward Rutherford.
Excellent.
1,000 pages later.
Very good.
What a book. I just absolutely loved it. It expanded my understanding of the history of France, of World War I, World War II, the French Revolution, anti-Semitism, so much about it. I can't wait to read another one by him.
Say the title again.
It's called Paris, the Novel by Edward Rutherford.
And you chose to do both audio and reading.
I did them both. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I couldn't understand what he was saying.
Right.
When you listen to a book that has a lot of a language that's foreign to you, I don't know what they're saying.
Of course.
So I have to go back and look at
that. Makes sense.
So that's really helpful.
Excellent.
But I did yesterday start a new book called A Right Worthy Woman by Ruth Watson. Hmm. It's based on a true story of the state of Virginia's Black Wall Street, which is something I never heard of.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything about. It's the story of Maggie Lena Walker. Her mom was enslaved, and she ended up becoming the first Black woman to establish and preside over a bank in the U.S.
Fascinating.
So that's going to be a good book. So excellent. I started that.
What did you eat?
We had date night last night.
Did you?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And where did you go out or stay in?
We went out. And I mean, it was a working date night. We looked at finances.
Oh,
so,
right.
So sitting across a table, we thought this is good and safe in many ways. You're sitting across from each other in a busy, loud restaurant.
You can only shout so much.
Yeah. So we went to Dad's in Monroeville, which is kind of like, you know, it's a
diner?
Pub. It's a pub.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had always when I see it on the menu, I had a Reuben, which...
So delicious.
That marbled rye with the corned beef and the sauerkraut and the Thousand Island. I mean, it's with some really good fries. And you know,
who put that together the first time?
Oh, that's so excellent. Huh?
Genius.
A Reuben. Absolutely. That's what I ate this week that I loved. Yeah.
That's great. This isn't what I ate. It's what I bought to eat later.
Later.
The store in the kitchen, which is run by the Woolley's family, Penn Avenue in the Strip.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kitchen store. And I go usually on Tuesdays because if you go in with your yellow in the kitchen bag, you get 10% off.
Oh, nice.
And Monica works there and she is the loveliest woman. So whenever I go in with my friend, she always says hi to us and we end up having a conversation. Anyway, I bought some flavored olive oil, which they sell in the back, which is not cheap. I will tell you that. This is an investment you're making. But it was... I think the name of it was Il Pizziola. So kind of like the restaurant, but it was pizza flavored olive oil.
What?
Yes. So I went home and I made pizza dough and I brushed that olive oil all over it. I cooked it for 6 minutes at 500 and then I covered it with herbs and Parmesan cheese and garlic.
Is that focaccia?
No, it's just pizza crust. It's just pizza crust with olive oil. And it was like the most delicious.
No kidding.
We had salad that night, and that was our little side.
Excellent.
Man, so thank you, Monica.
What did you watch?
Well, this may be the first for the two of us, because I'm projecting here.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched and finished a short series on Max, the Kate Winslet series, Mayor of Easttown. You watched it as well?
Yes, I did.
Is that your...
No, I was going to say something else,
okay.
Because I knew you were going to say this.
I mean... Only 8 episodes, deeply complex, character-driven. It's about a murder, but it is and it isn't. The family dynamics, the idea of suffering, mental illness, all these...
What happens when sexuality is so divorced from love?
Yes.
And fidelity.
A runaway train. And the people that it ensnares in that and how people suffer because of that. It's a wonderful, wonderful series.
It's incredible.
Only 8 episodes. So
I
if you
it.
Have Max, HBO Max, I can't recommend it. Kath, I'm glad you watched it as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Can't recommend it enough.
I'm so grateful you told me
about it. Kate Winslet.
I absolutely loved it. It's not for kids.
No.
There's nothing about it. There's not one thing about it that's for kids.
Yeah. I mean, that should just say, we should just say that as a given.
Yeah.
When we talk about stuff we're watching.
Right. It's not for kids. Right. Not for kids. Masters of the Air is what I wanted to bring up because my husband and I have been watching it. It's on Apple. It's about World War II American bomber pilots.
Yeah.
The 100th. Is what it focuses on. It stars Callum Turner and Anthony Boyle. It's produced by Spielberg and Tom Hanks. And it's
Band of Brothers.
It's the Band of Brothers and the Pacific.
Yeah.
And then this is the third version. And it makes me want to weep and cheer and everything else.
These kids.
I cannot believe 19-year-olds could do that. Yeah. I cannot believe it. Anyway, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I mean, there's a reason they were called the Greatest Generation.
Yeah, for sure.
What was the best news you heard this week?
Well, we just experienced it. I mean, we're living through this early spring.
Oh.
So despite whatever's going on in your life, right, the hardship or the trouble or whatnot, when you go outside and it's 75 degrees like it was yesterday,
The
windows are open up at your house and the sun is shining and it's warm and it's only the middle of March, you think, okay, we're going to suffer now here.
We are.
Right. We see the week ahead is like, you know, lower temperatures and whatnot. We don't fully expect spring to be here. But just a precursor of that, a little preview of it.
I'll take it.
Oh, me too.
That's the best
news by far. Yeah. You?
The best news I heard this week is the news story that you talked about, John. I think it was the top of this hour. Sonia Sotomayor and Amy Coney Barrett, both Supreme Court justices of the United States, are getting out and doing public appearances together so they can show a very fractured America that it's okay to disagree, that they don't agree on things, but that they're friends and they work together well and they make each other better.
They find consensus.
I mean, we need leaders who are willing to do that.
Yes.
Stand up and say, you know what? Don't settle for hating Democrats. Don't settle for hating Republicans.
And throwing firebombs at each other.
Exactly. Don't settle for thinking that your way is the only way.
Especially as believers. We're called to a higher standard here, right?
Absolutely.
To love our neighbor.
Yeah. Anyway, it's the best news I heard.
What have you been listening to?
Okay. This is me.
Little darling. It's been a long, long, lonely winter. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right. Little darling, the smiles are turning to the faces. Little darling, it seems like years since they've been there. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right.
That's Richie Havens.
Richie Havens.
Yep. Richie Havens first burst onto the scene because of Woodstock, where he took the main stage and he occupied the main stage for almost an hour because the other acts were stuck in traffic. So when the Woodstock album and then film came out, people who had never heard Richie Havens, he exploded and had a great career from that. That sort of that sound, that rhythm guitar, that beautiful gravelly voice, that was his mainstay.
Mm-hmm.
1969, I think.
Wow.
That song. Of course, that's a Beatles song.
Okay. You know, I like it better because it was done by someone who's not the Beatles.
Yes, you do.
Okay. Well, I was listening to this.
Thank you.
love that sound.
That sounds like a song for the brokenhearted.
It's called Alone Together.
Yeah. Well, it feels like 3 a.m.
Yes. Yes, it does. And despair has set in.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, most of us have lived in that time zone, right? At one point or another.
Yeah.
And that hits the note perfectly, right?
That's Kenny Dorham, who I had never heard of before last week. I don't know how I missed him, but he's a trumpet player, American trumpet player, died in 1972 as a young man when he died. But what a sound. I've been listening to like nothing but him for the last week.
Kenny Dorrit.
Dorham.
Spell it.
D-O-R-H-A-M. Hmm. Beautiful.
Well, the weekend truly has officially begun, but if you still are thinking about plans for the weekend, we've got a few recommendations. All of us old heads will recall March 1993, when despite the worst snowstorm in a century, Pittsburgh's St. Patrick's Day Parade went on as scheduled, as it has for decades. So the parade returns this year, of course, fair weather or foul, 1.4 miles downtown route. Apparently, some 200,000 spectators. It's a little dubious. I'm a little leery of that figure.
Yeah.
But if you're headed downtown, it looks to be a fun party.
Go for it.
Yeah, I've done it many times. Also, Robert Qualters. You know who Robert Qualters is?
Mm-mm.
He's an iconic Pittsburgh painter. He is 90 years old this year, and he's got a new show that opens tonight at B Galleries in Lawrenceville, if you're a Robert Qualters fan. Also, opera Verdi's La Traviata is in Pittsburgh at the Benedum Center tomorrow night, and it runs on weekends through March 24th. And this is super cool. Of course, nobody's going to replace the late Tina Turner, but a Tina Turner tribute concert is held at the Kelly Strayhorn Theater tomorrow evening.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yep.
It's also, John, National Peanut Lovers Day.
Mm-hmm,
talked about it earlier in the show. I don't go a day without a peanut. It's
really?
Just kind of the way I live. And in thinking about this earlier today, John, I came up with my top five uses for peanuts.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Can I George Washington Carver.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
Number one.
Yes.
I'm keeping them out on my counter so that I don't eat chips. Because nuts are better for you than chips.
Right about that.
You know, they really are.
Yeah. Do they have the same...
Yes.
Pleasure?
They do. And I think they even have a little more of it because they've got like a it seems heartier.
Yeah. How about a barbecue peanut?
Fine.
Mm-hmm.
You can put any seasoning on a peanut
it
and
adheres.
I'm happy with it, except unsalted, which is tragic.
Is that a disappointment or what?
Yeah. Number two,
yes.
I would say mix peanuts with raisins or cranberries.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm. That's stretching it a little
I
bit.
Love I love it so much.
You're pushing it like
no,
into the healthy
it's perfect.
Food category.
I love it. Right. It's so great. Number three,
yeah.
Clearly, and I hope that Lexi gives me a strong affirmation on this, peanut butter and banana.
Woo-hoo!
That is
really?
One of the most delicious things on earth.
Yeah, that sounds like Elvis Presley,
yep.
doesn't it?
Yep.
He did peanut butter.
He did bacon on that.
He did? Like peanut butter, bacon, and banana?
Right.
Oh, I'd eat that then.
coming up closely behind is peanut butter and apple.
Oh, that's a nice choice.
Yeah.
You're right about
very,
that.
Very,
yeah.
very delicious. Mm,
yeah.
Five, peanuts on any Asian noodle dish.
Oh, excellent.
Whether you're talking Vietnamese,
yeah.
you're talking Thai.
Yeah, sure.
That is absolutely delightful.
What's the peanut noodle thing?
The Vietnamese one? The vermicelli bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah, that has peanuts
in it.
Which
is peanut, like you get
or
cold
peanut sauce.
Sesame noodles.
Oh, or how about the peanut sauce
mm-hmm.
that you're going to dip spring rolls
yeah,
in?
Yeah, that's excellent. Very, very nice.
Are you kidding
nice.
Me? Mm-hmm. And the last one, John, but not least, Tin Roof Sunday.
What? Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's okay. Peanut and ice cream, not particularly.
What?
No, I'm not going there.
Oh, my gosh.
Both of you like, look, I don't really think so.
That's the king.
No.
I thank you.
Really?
That's
really?
The king.
Mm-mm.
Vanilla ice cream.
Kind of meh.
Hershey's chocolate sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Planters cocktail peanuts.
Maybe.
That's the great, it could be the greatest dessert of all time.
Get out of here.
Yes.
No way.
And if you eat it in that metal Sunday dish that's super cold.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, man.
All right, okay, fine.
That is everything.
All right.
So you don't like nuts with ice cream?
It's fine. I'm not going to go my way. I mean, if it appears there, you know, whenever they put like the aforementioned, the wet nuts, right, that whole mix together, that's fine.
What's the wet nuts?
What, you never had wet nuts?
No.
No, seriously. I mean, it's like, you know, you throw it on there, right? It comes in a mix like part of a sundae, like a banana split, yeah?
Oh, mm. I don't know what that is.
Anyway, have yourself a good
Just
weekend.
Make yourself a tender
happy
sundae
National
and be happy.
The Ride Home with John and Kathy, a production of Salem Media Group.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.